Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of Sports Tonight. We're brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Vemba, Pennsylvania. When you purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com, Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Give Tim Baker a call. He won't call the show, 352-588-5454. The Abbey Course is located at St. Louis University. Give Tom a call, 352-588-2060. They got a foursome, guys. It's $80 for a foursome of golf. And for these rates in Florida, they're astronomical. But, guys, we're going to dedicate this show who the guy made put hockey on the map in Philadelphia. We all know him, the late Keith Allen, gentleman, nice to welcome. Don Henderson, a Philadelphia legend, Roger Hender, Atlanta legend, and Frank does a great job of spinning the dials. Guys, a sad day in Philadelphia and Flyers hockey.
Well, Tommy, I agree with you 100%. Number one, remember when Keith first came into town, you know, Bud Poile at that time was the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, and Keith was the coach. And the first show that they did, I did with them on Channel 29, and the first actual television show that they did when they first came to town. And have stayed very close to Keith all these many years. He sat in the press box after he retired. He was always in that first seat when you walked in the press box. He was always downstairs in the dining lounge before the game. We've talked to Scotty Bowman so many times on this show. But Keith was just like Scotty. You could ask him to do anything at all, and then he would be more than happy to do it. And you're exactly right. One of the great people in hockey. And, of course, one of the great things he did was draft Bobby Clark and also to bring Freddie Shiro in. That pretty much stole the story.
You know, guys like to go.
Bobby, what's sad is that I believe that things come in threes. And in the last couple of weeks, we've lost the three now, Tom Gola, Harry Gamble, and now Keith Allen.
Right. Oh, that's right, Roger. Hey, guys, our prayers go out to Jim McKean. I talked to him yesterday. He's in the hospital. He had this little gout on his foot out there, but he said he's recuperating right now. So, Jim, if you're listening out there in your computer, please get healthy. We'll get you on when you get home from that hospital up there. And I said that Jim McKean, he's in our prayers right now. So
hey, Tommy, don't forget Scotty had an operation on his leg.
Right. Right, so hopefully I tried to call Scotty up and to wish him, but I got a message from his lovely wife, and I said, from the Skies and Sports Tonight, hope you're feeling better. God bless him. So hopefully Scotty's feeling better, and Jim McKean and these guys get well, because they're in their sports, guys. They were good friends growing up in Canada. And they were Jim was the quarterback, and Scotty was in the hockey. Jim's in the Canadian Hall of Fame up there, so... Isn't it ironic? Both gentlemen had minor setbacks, and we wish them the very best of luck.
Well, we start off on a little bit of a sad note, but at the same time, as you said just before Roger jumped on, the National Hockey League is going to take a little hiatus now during the Olympic Games, and so we're going to have a lot of things to talk about, and then also talk about the Olympic Games as well.
Yes, and
I was just going to ask you, Tommy, if you could send me on an email. Jim and Scotty's address in the hospital. I want to send them cards.
Okay, I think Scotty should be at the hockey game on Thursday. Jim said, don't bother sending cards out there and that.
Okay,
I'll call Jim in another couple weeks and when he gets home out there and that.
I'll tell you what he probably would enjoy more than anything else is that Chinese New Year. That you could probably handle that and send him a Chinese New Year card. I saw the one earlier today. It was striking.
Hey, Roger, if you feel like you need to send somebody cards, I'll send you my address. How's that? Anytime, Leo.
I'd like to welcome our football legend, Leo Haggerty. Leo, I apologize for not going to meeting Monday. I had a little plumbing problem. Hope you got my message up there. So, please email me if we have any. Yes.
Yeah, Tommy, I got your message that you pooped too much in the toilet and you overflowed it. That's the message.
It was that way. So hopefully, let me keep me posted about for the anything coming up in church up early. I apologize.
Well, I tell you, the one thing I called Leo yesterday, and I said the one thing we hate like heck to commend Leo on anything, but he was the one that nailed it last Wednesday night. If you remember, he talked about not only what Manning would do in terms of. Of throwing the football, and when you look at the numbers, well, he's 30 for his first 40. But as Leo said, it's not going to be how many passes he completes, but how many yards after the catch. And he might have been minus 10 yards after the first 30 out of 40. Leo, you were right on it.
Yes, he was.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. And you know what? I got a call, and I'm not going to say who it's from, but I may have been the only guy in the country that was on that. I tell you what, fellas, if you watch the first play when Thomas caught the little underneath drag route and Chancellor knocked him back 5 yards, I just turned to my lovely bride and said, this game is over. and you could see Denver wanted no parts of catching the ball. I mean, and here's the worst thing, guys, and let's get to this right now, okay? Everybody's talking about Peyton Manning's legacy and this and that, you know, with Brady. I'm going to throw this one out right to you right now. Is Eli Manning a better quarterback than Tom Brady? Hmm. Not Peyton, Eli.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, no, I don't think you can put them in the same league.
Yeah, but he's beaten Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl, and he's 2-0. So we got to stop comparing these Super Bowl wins.
Exactly.
It's not an even playing field. It's just, you know, you look at a guy, and if you can't throw Peyton Manning in the triumvirate of three quarterbacks in this league that ever played a game, I don't see how you can say. I mean, we can't call Dan Marino in the top five because he didn't win a Super Bowl. No.
I'll tell you, Roger was there all week, and you know, Roger, you and I talked as the week went along, and, you know, I don't think this takes anything away from Manning. Just winning the Super Bowl or losing the Super Bowl, really, he got the teams there. And
exactly.
Judge how good he is whether he lost or not.
Well, I agree, Don. And you know, just what Leo's saying, if you go back to 2004 in Jacksonville, what the Eagles and the Patriots, it should have been Donovan McNabb winning that game over Tom Brady. Let's face it, that should have been an Eagles win. And then, you know, you wouldn't even be talking about Brady the way you are now, which I think, you know, he's definitely a first-round Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, there's just so many different factors that come into the winning a Super Bowl. You have to be lucky. And I think we all admit the Giants were lucky to win that last one.
Right.
Yes.
Well, you know what, guys? What it shows.
You don't think everybody can make that Tyree catch? You don't think that could happen?
No.
No.
No. Not too many people have stick them on their helmet, Don. You know that.
Well, Leo, the only area I would disagree with you, and I wish Roy were on with us tonight because he and I discussed this almost weekly when it came to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, my biggest concern was not the fact that they centered the ball over Manning's head and got the safety. My concern was that you can't afford to make a mistake in a Super Bowl.
That's the guy
catches the opening kickoff 9 yards deep, going back, tries to run it out for no reason. And so instead of Manning getting the ball first and 10 to go on a 20, he has it first and 10 to go on the 11. Now, that makes a tremendous difference. You can't make that kind of mistake to open the game up. And I think everything, I agree with what you said about the receivers and the hits and all that, but to me, it happened right with the special teams on the very first play. You left Fox's team deeply in the hole.
Leo,
Roy will be on at 7:30. So we can probably
Great. Well, I agree with Don because I'll tell you, I've said it all season. I say it when I'm watching the Falcons game at the Dome. I do not understand why these guys, when they're 5-6 yards deep in the end zone, why they just don't come out to the 20. Because 9 times out of 10, they don't get to the 20.
That's right.
Let's tell it like it is. They've been told to bring it out of the end zone. Hey, remember early in the season where Chip Kelly was asked, he said, anytime we catch the ball and it's in the end zone, we're coming out with it. I mean, they are told by their special teams coaches, and trust me, this guy didn't just decide to come out of the end zone with it. They cover that in special teams meetings, and they probably told him, look, okay, opening kickoff, let's try to take it back. I don't care where it is. And you know
what? Well, it's one thing to take it back like they did in the second half, Leo, but they caught that ball 13 yards out of the end zone. They weren't anywhere near the end zone when he caught that ball. That's fine. You can do that. But you can't – I mean, you go back to the greatest coaches in the game, Alan. I don't care who you talk about. They would never make a play like that. I mean, unbelievable. Their special teams would never put their team in a hole like that.
Don, I understand it, but right now, that's the way they're coaching. They're saying, hey, let's bring it out and see what we can do.
Well, I'd have to have some coaches go and have a little conference on that. I'd like to see how many of them really believe that.
Don, trust me, that guy didn't decide that. That was covered in a meeting beforehand.
Well, wait a minute now. Roy said that this is our only chance, and you know, I would wait till Roy gets on. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But every time we discuss this, he said, you know, this is their only shot to make a play in the game. They're so hyped up to make their play, not for the team, for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they run the ball out.
Not because the coaches
tell them to.
Gentlemen, trust me on this one. I haven't coached in the pro level, but I coached in college. And believe me, you cover that. You tell them, you do not catch a punt inside the 10-yard line. If we're coming out of the end zone, we're only coming out at this time of the game. Believe me, these guys don't make those decisions. They're told that this is what they want to do. And, again, the first kickoff, you figure, okay, we're going to roll the dice. If we blank it, great. If we don't, okay, we're fine. No. Hey, how much money could you have made in Vegas putting $1,000 down saying the first snap was going to end up in a safety? I mean, nobody knew that. But you know what, fellas? We talk about yards after catch. But you know when that game really ended?
on the second play that Seattle had the ball when they ran Percy Harvin on an end around, and nobody on Denver even saw it. They could have ran that like a trick play all day long.
Let's be honest about it and say that there isn't one facet of the game that you can look at. Start with the head coach, the assistant coaches, the players, offense, defense, special teams. There was not one area of that football game that wasn't won by the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one area won, and that was the cheerleaders, and they don't keep score with that.
Don,
you're exactly right. And the only reason people watched that game in the second half was they thought they may see history in the making. You know, there's never been a shutout in the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right.
And I
let me disagree with you again, Leo, a little bit. You know why people watch that game? And it's not my – I didn't think this up, but I looked – I read it in the papers and I talked to somebody about it. They all watch the game because you know how much money was bet Las Vegas made? The biggest – they made more money in this game they made in the last three put together.
Unbelievable.
They have these little boxes. They have the little boxes where you pick your numbers. They have all these things you're talking about. What's the first play going to do? Who's going to score first? Mm. Who's going to punt the ball first? Who's going to kick off? They got all these bets going. That's why they had 112,000 people watching, or a million people watching the game at the end. Not because it was a ball game, but because they had so much money bet on it.
Yeah, and you know what, Don? The problem was no one's ever said what time that was. It was 112 million at kickoff. I'll bet it wasn't 112 million at 9 o'clock at night.
Roger, maybe you saw the ones that Henry sent us. They gave a little bit of a breakdown, and it was almost exactly the same at the end as it was in the first quarter.
Yeah,
hey,
they went hour by hour.
Nielsen goes hour by hour. Yeah, you're exactly. But I'll tell you what, if I'm paying $4 million for a commercial, I don't want it in the fourth quarter.
Not in that game.
Exactly.
I just want to say one thing. The turning point, in my opinion, in that game was the flip of the coin when Seattle won and deferred.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when Namath called and the referee grabbed it in the air. Was that a miracle or what?
Barry McGauley had to grab it. No, I really thought that. I mean, when they deferred, that's sending a message that their defense is so good, and then it was just, you know, one thing after another. However, I do say that the Denver defense wasn't all that bad. They were behind the eight ball because of all the turnovers.
Right.
That's right.
And it wasn't that bad in the first half at all, even though they were down by the number of points that they were down. They stopped them. They gave them field goals, not touchdowns. You're right. The first half, and I also agree with you, after the game on NFL Channel, that's all they talked about was the fact that that defer at the beginning of the game proved to everybody on the Seattle Seahawks team that they thought they could control the game right from the get-go.
That's right.
Right.
General, I'd like to welcome a head coach of the Tampa Bay Storm, a good friend of ours, Mr. Lawrence Samus. Lawrence, we're talking some football. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Tommy? How you doing, Don?
We're doing great. We're
good
doing life. Great. Leo's just giving us a lot of coaching philosophy, and now we'll see what a coach has to say about it.
Yes. Go ahead, Lawrence.
You know what, though? It's hard to tell an arena guy because they got to run it out of the end zone, right?
Hey, Lawrence, you're working for a Hall of Famer now. Isn't that great?
So is he.
Oh, that's great.
Lawrence was in the Hall of Fame before Brooks was, though.
No. Well, I know, but I'm saying in the Eric Brooks now is a Hall of Famer. You know, Lawrence reports to him, right?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah,
yeah.
Lawrence, talk about training camp. Got a couple weeks away. This is an exciting time for the Tampa Bay Storm right now about training camp.
Oh, it's an exciting time for our staff. We're actually planning out our plan for the training, starting the training camp. We started a while back, months ago, but now we're actually solidifying things and trying to match it all up. And we're excited. We're ready to go. We're ready to get this thing started.
I can't wait for it, Lawrence. Tell Ben every time we go in the office, I wear my Tampa Bay Storm old school golf shirt. Every time I go in there, yeah, I know it's a hockey season, but I'm so geared up for the storm. Like we said before, we're playing football in the August this year. A little souvenir will come out of it for you, Lawrence.
Oh, that's right. We plan on getting in August and going further than what we did this past year.
Lawrence, did I understand you say that they are going to have another tryout on the 16th?
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be at the Ice Palace, or will that be over at the field?
It's going to be in the Ice Palace. It's going to be in the Forum. It's on February the 16th, and you never know. We're going to leave no stone unturned, and maybe we can find one more guy that one guy can get us to the Arena Bowl where we need to be, and we can win it all with that one guy. So we're going to July the 16th to actually bring the local talent in and the guys that we invited down to come in and see if we can find just one more, one or two more. It doesn't really matter what tryouts you go to. I think that any time that we do hold a tryout in our area, it benefits us all.
Coach, let me ask you the $64 question. Has Coach Lawrence Samuels found the second coming of player Lawrence Samuels yet?
Say that again.
Have you found anybody to replace you as a player?
Found anybody that can match me when I was a player?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I really don't measure myself to anybody. I try to work within the limits of the team and see what our needs are. And, hopefully I can find a guy that's better than me. So I don't know. I wouldn't know until training camp actually starts. But we are going to go back to some of the old school things that we used to do, like crossing over players and allowing them the opportunity to play both ways. I think that's one of the areas that actually really got us in trouble last year in the playoff game, guys having to play on defense when they just normally offensive guys. So we're going to train our guys early for all facets of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. So we'll be prepared this year if we ever get into a situation like we did last year.
Lawrence, what would you say is your softest spot right now? What do you need most when you look? You say one player may be the one to get you over the hump, but what one area are you really concerned about?
Well, always look for your pass rush, and when we started this thing off, when I was hired, I told them that we were going to start off with a 30-60-90-day plan, and I thought that the plan that I had in effect, the first month, the second month, and the third month, actually, our main focus was offense. We wanted to build up our offensive line. I think we've gotten a lot better on the offensive line. We've acquired the starting center out of San Jose, which is Raymond McNeil, and he's going to be the anchor of it. I think that having Crosby back healthy at the fullback position, having Alfred McCullough back, and then the guys that we acquired, we have some bigger guys that can actually protect our quarterback this year. The next area that our main focus on is the pass rush. We're going to be young, but we're going to be talented. I think we get a very careful evaluation of the guys that we have up front on the pass rushing side of the ball, on the defensive side, and we got some returns in the secondary, so We're looking pass rush wise. We're looking definitely looking to get an extra pass rusher.
That sounds so great, Lawrence. And the main thing about the storm, it still worries me, is the kicking game. The field goal kicker through those small uprights out there. Is Juan still coming back for us next year? This year coming up?
Actually, we acquired a new kicker. We have a new
good
guy. We've made some changes. We've made a lot of changes, the guy that we acquired, we actually had him, we brought him in last year. His name is Carlos Lopez, and he's going to, I believe he's really going to do a great job. He has all the kits, all the on-site kits. everything that you want in an arena kicker. And, you know, hopefully he can come in and start out well for us and just solidify his spot on the special teams part of it. And he's going to be the leader of the special, because it all starts with him.
Oh, that's
How about
great
the quarterback
news.
Situation, Lawrence? Is that settled?
Well, I'm going to tell you like this. Every position is up for grabs.
Ooh.
It's no starters from the day one. I have some great young talent that's going to come in, and they're going to challenge. They're going to push our older guys for a starting job. And my thing is when I came in, I wanted to create competition in every position, and I believe that every position is up for grabs at this point.
Wow. Oh, that's great news. Competition and training camps, Lawrence. With your expertise and Coach Hovant, with their expertise, I think it's a solid coaching staff. You're going to have a solid training camp and football into August and get a souvenir for everybody at the forum, especially yourself. You deserve it, Lawrence.
We can't wait. Actually, my guys, the coaches can't wait to start coaching. You can only do so much planning, which planning is good. But we're ready to get out on the field and get started. You know, we're anxious to see some of the internal battles that's going to, you know, competition breeds champions. So I think that by us creating competition in every position, it's going to bring out the best in all the guys. And we're going to pick, you know, it's almost like Tony Dungy said, you're not going to pick the 24 best athletes. But we're gonna pick the 24 best football players that fit the organization for the chance based on.
Wow, there you guys.
You know, Lawrence, I didn't know this until last week. I'm sure maybe the other guys did. The old commissioner of the Arena League, Dave Baker, is now the head of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
That's correct. I just found that out myself.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe Frank will hook up with him. I have his number, and his son is Sam Baker, the left tackle on the Falcons from USC. And
wow.
I've had breakfast
right.
with Dave a number of times when he's been in the area for games. And it wasn't until last week, you know, I got the Hall of Fame booklet. I looked in there, holy smokes, Dave Baker's the head of the Pro Football Hall of Fame now.
That's right. That's right.
Wow, it's a small world, you know. It's like I wouldn't want to be up there now, Lawrence. See the weather in Cleveland; it's snowing like crazy in the Northeast down there. So, thank God we're where we're at right now. I don't see it snowing.
I have some friends that's up in Ohio, and they're cold right about now.
Nasty weather.
Lawrence, can you give us another rundown on next Saturday that you're going to have your tryouts? The time it starts and whatever, what they need to bring or anything?
Actually, at the tryout, it's going to be indoor, so we just use indoor turf shoes, and that's about it. Just be ready to go, and we're going to have a great tryout. We always have a great turnout here in the Tampa Bay area. Guys, you know, they're looking to compete, and we the way the organization has set it up, Derek Gooch, Dave Wilson and those guys, we've done an excellent job of how we set up our tryout. Just commending the group that they work hard at what they do. And they put on a great tryout. I think it's probably one of the better ones that I've, you know, been a part of. And it's a great way to evaluate the local talent.
What is it that they do when they're at the tryout? What's the candidate have to go to?
You know, one thing that they do is, you know, Coach Wilson does a great job collecting, making a database. You know, if we miss a guy, we usually, you know, we can't watch them all at the same time, but he does a great job collecting the data on guys. And, you know, if they do well in the tryout and we can't bring them into camp, he does a good job bringing them in during the season so they get to work out with the team and have an opportunity again to actually, you know, make our team.
Mm-hmm.
What time does it start?
Hello?
What time does it start?
Actually, registration starts at 8 o'clock, and we would actually get started about 9:30. We actually would actually start the trial.
Great.
Fantastic. Lori, can we get you on next week to talk about how the tryouts went for you guys?
Oh, that'd be great.
Super. Same time, same station. We'll get you on up there. So, Lawrence, I'll probably walk by the office tomorrow. I'll be in the building tomorrow. So maybe meet you by the break when we get some of that lovely coffee.
That's our meeting spot.
I know. I'll see you around 1 o'clock there after Toronto skates.
That's right. That's our meeting spot right there at the coffee machine.
Yeah. The one side's broken, Lawrence. You get the overload on the other side now. So, oh boy, they got to fix the one thing. I told that to Bill today. The one coffee's busted. You got to fix the thing. So Ben says you got to go upstairs and get your coffee now. So, oh boy.
Right.
Lawrence, always a pleasure, sir. We'll talk to you next week, same time, same station. Have a great trial, Kip. I'll see you tomorrow, Lawrence.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Take care, Lawrence. Good luck in the season.
Take care, Coach.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Well, guys, we're going to have Lawrence Sam was going to call back next week, tell us how the trial camp goes. And Arena Football, I believe it's just around the corner, their first home game in March, guys.
Let's switch back to the Super Bowl just for a couple seconds.
I'm glad you said that, Don, because Roy's on with us now. Now you can answer your question.
I don't want to go over old news, but you know how I feel about running balls out of the end zone. And I thought the first play of the game set the stage because the guy tries to run it out from 9 yards in, and he leaves his quarterback on the 11-yard line, and the next thing you know, they got a safety. I can't imagine in a Super Bowl game that you're going to leave your quarterback on the 11-yard line trying to run it out from 9 yards deep.
Are you asking me about that?
Yes, he's asking.
Oh, I see. You wish you were on, so I'm asking to repeat it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. You know, I'll tell you what, I sort of agree. I think, yeah, in a lot of ways I do agree with you. I'm not a big fan of running it out from as far back as he was. You know what, I think that's the emotion of the moment. The game's kicking off. You got a chance to make a play. You know, every player thinks he can probably break it, and he's trying to do what, you know, in essence, what Percy Harvin did at the beginning of the second half. I can see why
it happened.
Yeah, but
where he did it from. He was not anywhere near the end zone. He ran 87 yards.
No, I totally agree with you. And see, here's the thing. I don't think, you know, every coach in football talks all the time about how it's, you know, it's three phases. It's offense, defense, and special teams. Yet for some reason, special teams seems to take more chances than any other, compared to the number of opportunities they get. You know, they take these long field goal tries sometimes. That's risky. Almost everything a special teams unit does is very risky. Punt returns are risky. You got to be really well coached. And I think there's got to, you know, if I'm coaching a football team, I'm telling my guy, if you're three yards deep or more, and maybe I might even tell him 2 yards deep, if you're 2 yards deep or more than 2 yards deep in the end zone receiving the ball, you're not bringing it out. Or if you do bring it out, it'll be the last time you bring it out for me. Because
right.
You've got 20 yards. In order to get, you know, again, you know, you've got to run, you got to bring it back 30-some yards if you're as far back as he was on that play.
Exactly right.
Get it to the point where they give it to you. They give you 20 yards. So in order to make that up, you've got to pretty much be guaranteed you're going to do better than that. And if you can't guarantee you're going to be better than that, I think you got to just let it, you know, as much as you want to make a play, you got to just let, you know, discretion be the better part of valor there and play it smart. And I don't think very many people play it smart. Again, I understand why it happens, but if I'm a coach, I'm making sure it doesn't happen with my team.
Roy, I'm with you 100%. And the other thing that I worth is that, you know, it used to be a set rule when you stood on a 10-yard line, if the ball was going to be over your head, you know, you let it go. I realize the game has changed now because – you know, the guys coming down the field get behind you. They can catch you and leave you on the 2-yard line. You got to use a little discretion there. But, again, you got to be awfully – you have to have an awfully good punt returner to be able to realize what can and cannot be done. And, you know, they make so many mistakes, as you said, in a situation like that, that it's such a big part of the game.
Well, you're right.
But
you know, here's the thing. And you know, we all know, because we follow the game, we listen to the players talk, they've all got marks and keys and things like that that they talk about. And what they mean in a lot of those instances, for example, is in the secondary, you know, for example, players have marks and keys and spots where they're supposed to be, or boundaries is what they are. And it's like, you don't go any further back than this. The rest is on another guy if you're playing a zone, for example, or something like that. Well, same thing happens on special teams, and you're right. That whole old argument, I say old because I think it's really maybe been tossed out the window, is it used to be that if you stepped on the 10-yard line, you know, you step no further. If that ball's over your head, you let it go. And if they down it at the 2, they down it at the 2.
Exactly.
But you don't want to fair catch it at the 8 or the 7 because you're in a bad situation. The likelihood of that ball bouncing into the end zone is much greater than you taking and getting the ball at the 20 is much greater than you doing anything by making a fair catch at the 8. Your offense is in a hole at that point.
That's
Why would you do that?
That's right.
You know what? Gentlemen, let me answer that question for you. If you look at what's happening in the punting game now, they are punting the ball end first. They are not punting it flat. They are punting it like a kick. So it's going end over end, and when it bounces, it dies. That's why now, and again,
that might happen 1 out of 10 times.
Don, it happens over 50% of the time. These guys go out and do it. I sit there and watch it in training camp. The kickers get out there, the punters get out there, and the punter sits there at the 50-yard line, and he's going to kick it. It's gotten to a point now where instead of fair catching at the 10, they'll fair catch it at the 5. Because they're scared to death. When that ball hits, it's going to die. Because now it's coming down point first.
Well, I don't know what Roy thinks, but I'll tell you one thing. I'd take my odds against that happening. I agree that one of the gunners may get down on a high punt and catch it inside the 10-yard line, and then you're stuck. But I'd make him make a play. I'm not buying the thing. I would take my chance.
I agree. I would take my chances. And, Leo, I hear what you're saying. I mean, the punting game has become they've become a lot smarter, a lot more technical about it. And they're certainly going for that corner a lot, you know, or trying to directional kick it and things like that. There's a lot more of that kind of thing going on. But I'm with you. I still think that you got to, you know, you got to be smart about it. I mean, why accept a fair catch at the 5 or the 8 when you still got the chance of getting it at the 20 if the ball bounces in? I just think you got to be smart about it. And, it may be the new wave, and you might be trying to prevent them. But what are you preventing? You're playing into their hands that way. Let it bounce.
That's
open
right.
The kick that the kicker, the punter.
Not only that, Roy, but you're already losing
calculate.
2 yards. If they let's say that you can fair catch it on the 5, and they down it on the 3. You know, are you in a bigger hole because they down it on the 3 than you would have been at the 5?
Great point. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. If they don't get down there, and again, the rules, I mean, the ability of most players to stop their body motion, you know, from going into the end zone and actually downing that ball, because that's a difficult thing to do. You know, you basically have to down something going in the other direction from the other, because you can't be in the end zone doing it. So it's a very difficult thing to down that ball, you know, right by the goal line. So you're right. If you're only going to lose a couple of yards, what's the difference when the advantage is you can gain 15 yards? So,
or 18.
Or at least 18 or more, you know. So, I think you got to go back to the old basics. I really do.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you about that because it's the same thing, Roy. And the pet peeve watching the Super Bowl, how can these offensive linemen be offsides? They've been playing football for 6 blessed months, and these guys are still offsides. And it's February football for going for a championship, and these guys are offsides. They're still making dumb mistakes up there.
Well, wait a minute. Could we have had – look, when the Buccaneers opened up the season and had a safety go over – the quarter, Josh Freeman's head, or safety, I'm sorry, had a snap go over Josh Freeman's head into the end zone in the same facility that the Super Bowl was played in, the same building that the Super Bowl was played in. We could all chalk it up at that point to, well, okay, you just got out of training camp. You know, we were all flabbergasted. It shouldn't happen then. You know, you've had, what, six weeks to work on this.
Yep.
They've had, what, 35 weeks to work on this thing, and the next thing, I think the first play of the game is over his, is snaps over his head. That was horrible. But you know what? These things happen, guys. It's why,
no question.
You know.
But the other thing is that we just saw a game, and they talked a great deal about it during the game, after the game, and on the post-game shows about the noise level. They said the noise level, you know, at the stadium was as loud as it's ever been in any game so far played in the new stadium. But only the week before, when they played in Seattle, it's supposed to be the loudest, and they always have that meter there to tell you how it is. San Francisco didn't have any trouble at all. Nothing. Why would
right.
why would That makes no sense to me. If you can go to San Francisco, you can go into Seattle and have no problem.
Yep.
Why
you know
can't Buffalo come into New York and have no problem?
And you know what makes no sense to me is, look, I'm not saying that there wasn't noise and that it wasn't very loud and backed up as they were, you know, around the end zone. It's the perfect thing because, you know, now you got noise coming from behind and both sides, and the game is just starting, so everybody's amped up. But from what I've been hearing, there were about 10,000 people that still weren't even in the stadium yet because the transportation was such a mess. They didn't get there until 8:30 at night. They missed the first half. So I'm thinking, look, it wasn't even filled up yet. So I'm not sure that's
an issue. Amen, Roy. You are exactly right. In fact,
yep.
the last train to go out, they announced at the stadium, do not leave the stadium. We cannot get you on a train. The last train to leave the Meadowlands to go back to Secaucus Junction was at 1:11 in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah, and they were in the stadium, Leo, and Roy's talking about coming to the stadium.
Yeah, I'm talking about coming to the stadium.
It was two to three hours delays out of Secaucus. Absolutely.
Yeah, there were people at 8:30 at night, there were still people trying to get on train to get to the stadium.
Well,
so,
I will say this. I will interject this point. My son was at the game, and he said to me when I talked to him yesterday, he said that was as loud as any game that he's ever seen when that first play took place. And he said he didn't say anything about the stadium only being two-thirds full or anything else. He said that was the loudest stadium when that game started that he's ever been in. And I want to tell you, he's seen a lot of football games.
I'll tell you what, from watching it on TV, it did seem – like, I mean, the orange was pretty easy to pick out. It looked like hunters in Wisconsin in the forest because there weren't many. And I saw an awful lot of green and blue and Seattle really came out for that game, guys.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think they almost turned it into a home field advantage with them. And that 12th man is a big thing, you know. And Todd Lewicki, now with the Lightning, was really kind of the orchestrator of that. He kind of came up with that whole idea, and I'll tell you what, they carried it all the way to the other coast, and I think it made a big difference in that game because, as you say, you know, it certainly impacted that play that started the game and the whole game. You know, from that point on, it was that set the tone right there.
Well, we chatted earlier
about
it. I can't see one area where
you
know Seattle didn't dominate. Not just win that particular area, whether it was special teams, offense, defense, coaching. I don't care what it was. There's nothing that Seattle lost.
No, you're right.
Exactly
you're absolutely right. They were sharp in every facet of the game. And really, in my opinion, just the opposite for Denver. Denver looked completely out of sorts at every position. You know, who was it? Demaryius Thomas. I'll tell you what, as tough as a game as Peyton Manning played, I mean, this guy had an opportunity several times, and Leo, you can tell us this. I mean, the old adage on offense, you know, is take what the defense gives you. Well, the defense was giving him opportunities to turn catches into long yardage, you know, and first down, and he kept trying to juke guys, and that just every time you stop and try to make a maneuver on a guy, it just gives the guys coming full speed at you an extra second to make a play, and he was hurting himself more than he was helping the team. By trying to do that, and I just think the whole Denver team was just completely out of sorts in that game.
Roy, you're
yes.
exactly
Amen.
Right, and that's what I said last week, that the difference in the game was going to be not how many passes Peyton Manning completes, but how many yards the Denver receivers get, and
yeah.
I could not believe how little yards after catch. I think it was like 18 yards at halftime. I mean, when they would catch the ball, they were getting hit. Roy, did it remind you a lot of the Oakland-Tampa Bay Super Bowl where Oakland would catch the ball and Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, and they got hit right away?
Yeah.
It was almost like the same thing.
I totally agree. And you know what? And I would like to say that it all, you know, all that was on Seattle, but I can't. Again, as I said, I just think there were a lot of bad decisions made by the receivers once they got the ball in their hands. You know, Peyton Manning did get the ball in their hands a record number of times. So you know, he got the ball off, and unfortunately, he just couldn't do anything with it. And Seattle had a lot to do with that, but I don't think it was all Seattle. I think it was some poor decision making on the part of the pass catchers by the Broncos.
And there were a couple of plays, Roy, if you remember, where they had the first down and they came back behind the first down line, and only once were they fortunate enough to make up for what they lost.
Well, that's what I was alluding to when I was talking about Thomas. He would have these brief little windows there, where he could break through and get the first down. And instead, you know, he's trying to make another move and turn it into a bigger play. Look, just take what they give you.
Yep,
don't try to take more than what you're going to get out of this play.
Yeah. Hey, guys, a couple of things just to follow up with one of your points. Look at the teams that have drafted punters in recent years. And I'm thinking about right here, Matt Bosher, fifth round out of Miami. He's the holder kickoffs and punts. And there's other examples, too. The other thing is there was a great point made on Sirius NFL Radio by Pat Kerwin. And I'd like you to expound on this. His statement was a rookie quarterback contract means a good defense. A non-rookie quarterback contract, in other words, the big one, means a lesser defense. And I really think that hits the nail on the head.
Well, it's hard to argue with that because when you look at some of the teams, let's face it, Green Bay, I think, would love to have that kind of a defense like Seattle, but it's not going to happen. They're paying too much money. When more than 10% of your salary cap is going to one player, not one position, one player, I think it does dictate a real problem. And certainly that has been an issue in Green Bay. It has been an issue at times in New England. It's been an issue certainly in Dallas. I think to some degree in Atlanta. Yes, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Certainly New Orleans has had that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other places, you're right. Look at the teams with great defenses, the best defenses at least this year. Carolina, young quarterback, still in the rookie contract. Seattle, young quarterback, still in the rookie contract. San Francisco, great defense, still in a rookie contract with their quarterback. You're right. That's a tremendous, you know, Pat's a smart guy, and I'll tell you what, I think he nailed something there, Rogers. You hit it on the head, man.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I thought about it all week, and I agree with him 100%, and I'm with you. I mean, I really learn a lot from him, you know, not only on the radio, but with his book and everything. But it really makes sense. And, you know, I've got to wonder now whether with the new salary cap, I mean, it's going to go up, but I'm just wondering now if teams are going to de-emphasize the quarterback from what I'm not going to pay, you know, have a guy for 15 years making – what, like you said, 20% of the, or, you know, 10 or 20%. I mean, in the Falcons case, Matt's making 20 mil. That's more than 10% of the salary cap.
But, Roger, you're talking about the same thing in every sport. I mean, you look at the teams that have, you know, 4 and 5 players that make up 70% of the payroll. I mean, it's not just football that's doing this. It's all sports that are doing it.
Yeah, but in baseball,
like the Phillies have like 5 or 6 players that are in that category out of 9. But like what Roy said, when you have a quarterback, one player out of 11 on offense and one out of 22, actually one out of, 53, I mean, making $20 million, I mean, football is a totally different entity than the other sports.
Yeah, it is because there is a hard cap in football. Baseball doesn't have a cap. So, you know, they can do it. Yeah, you can do it in baseball. You can pay $25 million if you're in the New York Yankees to your first baseman, your third baseman, your shortstop, your top pitcher, and two of your outfielders. You can do that because they've got the money. In places like Tampa, it's not so simple. You got to be a little bit more prudent with your cash. But You know, the situation you're talking about, Roger, that you explained, that debate over where to put the resources, the financial resources, is going on right now here in Tampa because they've got a quarterback who they believe in, has some tools, and he's in a rookie contract, and Mike Glennon. But this is a team that needs a defensive end or two, and they know they're going to have to pay big money for it. They've got cap room, but they've got to make that decision. And I'm pretty sure that at the end of the day, the decision is going to be to have put that money into the resource on the defensive side of the ball and not into the quarterback. One reason they'll do that is because free agency doesn't really offer up much. But what they may do is they'll keep Mike Glennon in there, maybe go get a backup type free agent, pay him, you know, maybe $6-7 million over the next 2 years, perhaps even each year at that number. To have a guy who's played and won a little bit, you'll have to do that. But my guess is they'll probably use a mid-round pick, maybe even an early round pick, on a quarterback and say, okay, that's our quarterback position, because if you believe in defense first, and the Buccaneers do under Lovie Smith, you're probably going to you have to have that quarterback, yes, but I think you also have to have him making a lot less than $20 million a year.
Hey,
well,
I got a question.
I don't know if you heard Pete Carroll's comment today, but he said, you know, we're going to sit down and start to look at next year. But the telling point, I think this is where Pat Cohen comes in. He said, we're not going to be in the shape that Baltimore was in. Remember, as soon as the Ravens won the Super Bowl, you had Flacco in a contract year.
Yeah.
They had no options. They had to pay him. Same
right.
thing here. Seattle's got him. I mean, Seattle may be strong for another 2 years simply because they're playing with that contract year.
Absolutely. And you know what that does is it gives you time. What this has done with these young quarterbacks excelling is it gives you time to build up the other areas of your team in a similar way. Draft a young defensive end. Draft a young dynamic linebacker. Draft a young dynamic corner or safety so that you're prepared and they're still in a rookie contract when you do have to pay the quarterback. That's how teams are going to have to start building their clubs now. Build the roster, and they're going to have to think of it in that financial regard because you're right. There's no question. You look at the Ravens and what they had to do financially on the defensive side of the ball in order to keep the quarterback, and it killed them. It took them it almost took them out of the running for a playoff spot. And
the same thing happened with the Falcons because the first 5 years of Matt, the Falcons were in the playoffs 4 out of 5 years. And then the sixth year, when he's on the new contract, they're in the dumper.
Well, also, Roger, it also kills your depth. I mean, the depth is, they keep talking about what happened with Seattle and where they were so strong in their 4, 5, and 6 picks, which are really, and the free agents that they picked up. And that's really the heart and soul of where they were, too.
But you know what else?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Don, if you look at their roster, they do have several key players that are in their free agents after this year. I mean, going into next year, so they're going to have changes too. There's no doubt.
Well, they're only 20.
Will.
What do they say?
Will.
20. They're only 24.9 average age, right?
Something
yeah,
like that.
Right.
Yeah,
very
they're
young
very
team.
Young.
But you know what? You know what they did though in building this team, guys. What Seattle did. What they did last year, particularly in building the defense, especially up front, is they didn't necessarily go for the grade-A players up front. They went for Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill,
right.
and a couple others. You know, they went and got guys who they knew could be effective, but were kind of going to, in a prove-it situation. Certainly Michael Bennett was, Cliff Averill to a little bit of a degree, more established Cliff Averill was. But he was a guy that, he didn't get $16 million a year, so they went and got grade B, I think, players with grade A potential and put them in situations that work and where they could excel, and that's how they built that defense. So it's another model there that you don't have to go get the best guy of the bunch. You've got to make sure you get a guy that you can work into your system and find a way for him to excel, and if you can do it at a lesser price, you're going to be able to succeed. Now, you're right. They do have some work to do this offseason to maintain those guys, but hey, you know what? When you win a Super Bowl, most people, especially the young guys, they want to stay with you. Michael Bennett's already said he'd love to stay, part of this team next year, and I'm sure everybody else that's a free agent in Seattle feels the same way. They all want to be a part of this again next year. They love playing for the coach. They love the city. The fans are tremendous. And obviously winning just it caps everything. So
all the guys from Philadelphia will love this because I know I had forgotten about it. When Pete Carroll was fired by the Jets, he and Pat Kerwin was the general manager. They had it that they were going to change, I think it was six coaches on Pete's staff, and the players they were going to get rid of. They get called into Leon Hess's office, and they were going to sit down with him. Leon tells them, Pat, you're finished. I'm not, Pete, you're finished. Pat stays, you're finished. And then he tells them the next day, Pat, your new coach is Rich Kotite.
That's brutal.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Roy, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you two questions. One, are you surprised Tony Dungy didn't get in the Hall of Fame? And number two, you got to be happy that Steven Stamkos is not going over to play in the Olympics.
Ooh.
Well, let me take the first I'll tell you what. Let me take the first question first because I think the second may lead into a change of topic. So, surprise? No, the answer is shocked. But I will say this, because I believe Tony Dungy, in my opinion, is a first ballot Hall of Famer in life,
yes,
much less the game of football. I'm disappointed in the Hall selection group, those 46 voting members. But having talked to Ira Kaufman about it, 47 minutes were spent on that one person on that topic of Tony Dungy in the debate. And apparently the argument that came back, the negative argument, and I don't know how much the vote was. I was surprised he didn't make the final 10. In fact, shocked that he didn't make the final 10 and therefore basically never had a shot this year at getting in to the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
But I guess the argument that was coming back to Ira, who made the pitch, was that why am I voting for a coach who's won one Super Bowl when I've got several other coaches still out there who have won two Super Bowls and they're not in the Hall of Fame? And it's part of the problem I have with the way the voting goes in the NFL, where everything seems to be about Pro Bowls and Super Bowls and how many have you won and
mm-hmm.
this kind of thing. I think the numbers are skewed because I think the people who believe that Tony Dungy only won one Super Bowl and think that's a shot, I think they're missing Tony Dungy, the person, and what he did.
Yes.
You know, we all know
mm-hmm.
what he did. He developed the Tampa 2 defense, which became a dominant defense in the league for an era of players. The coaching tree is dynamic. He's as good a person, as good for the game as anyone has ever been.
Amen.
And, yes, amen to that and over
yes.
again. And so I think they're missing the point with Tony. But I I'll say this, and I made this joke today. You know, look, and this is not a shot on Peyton Manning, although it comes this way. Somebody was saying, well, he did only win one Super Bowl. I said, yeah, maybe that's because he had Peyton Manning as his quarterback. You ever think of that? You know, I mean, you know, maybe if somebody else had been a quarterback in Indianapolis, maybe he would have won two or three there because Peyton Manning has a hard time winning Super Bowls, obviously. So, yes, I was shocked, very disappointed. That's maybe the better word, disappointed, because I would think
mm-hmm.
that people would look at the situation a little bit more broadly than they did in that Hall of Fame voting room, and they didn't.
Roy, before you switch over to Stamkos, how about the ramifications of what happened with that 47 minutes? I mean, the National Football League at the time, everything down to the second, had the players tweeting out that they were in the Hall of Fame before they ever got it on the air because they went too far with that 47 minutes, and they had to put it on a delayed basis on tape.
Well, I think the reason that happened is because they're trying to delay the information until 8 o'clock when they have this again, something else that the NFL has taken from the NHL, then there must be about two dozen of these things now, including handing over the Lombardi Trophy on the playing field in front of all the fans. That's what the Stanley Cup's about. But this is something else, you know, having a kind of an award ceremony, which has been a hockey thing for decades now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now the NFL wants to do that, and they want to make the Hall of Fame part of it. So Hall of Fame voters who find out their fate at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they're not going to wait till 4 hours later to tell their family that, you know, the news and their closest friends and associates. So, that stuff's going to get put out. But, you know, at least they put in the time. I'm happy that the Hall of Fame voting committee is putting in these long days to go through
right.
these guys.
Right.
Maybe what you're going to see happen is in the future, maybe there's going to be a conference call that goes on or something like that where they maybe get it down to the final 10 before they get into that room because so much time is being spent on some of these candidates. I don't know, but we'll see what happens with that.
Well, why don't they just get Warren Sapp to come in? He'll straighten it all out.
because he knows who's worthy of a Hall of Fame.
Exactly right.
He's
got it all down pat.
He sure does.
Roy, do you have an opportunity to become a member of the Hall of Fame Selection Committee?
Well, I guess I would have the opportunity. The way it happens is there's one voter in every market, although New York, New Jersey has a few because of it's the size of the media market. But there's one from the Tampa Bay market, and it's Ira Kaufman's vote now because it used to be Tom McEwen's vote, and Tom got it when Tampa got a franchise, and Tom handed it to Ira because he was our NFL writer, is our NFL writer, and, you know, my focus is solely on the team, and Ira's time covering the league was greater than mine. His knowledge of the history of the league is greater than mine, and I certainly had no qualms over it at all. In fact, it's something I, at this point, have very little interest in doing, but as time goes on, you know, if Ira decides to retire or whatever, and he's got to hand it down and I'm still working, my hope is that it would go to me. Now, it could go to somebody else. I would, you know, he'll have to say on who it goes to, but I think it also has to be voted on or agreed to by the other members, and I would hope that at that point that if he decides it's me, I would love to be involved in it. But at this point, you know, barring some calamity, which we don't want to happen, it's going to stay in Ira's hands, and that's fine. I think he does a darn good job. He certainly did a good job making the presentation for Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks, and I think he did a fabulous job with Tony Dungy and John Lynch's presentation. It's just, you know, it's a tough sell in there sometimes, and we found that out this year.
Ira always does a great job.
On the Stamkos thing. On the Stamkos.
You got to talk about Stamkos here.
Well, the way you phrased the question, no, I'm not glad he's not going to the Olympics, because the downside of this whole decision, guys, is that he's not going to play for the Lightning anytime soon either. And it wasn't that I was anxious to see him come back and play Saturday night, because I've been feeling for a while now, guys, as you well know, that this thing is being pushed, that people inside that organization and maybe even outside the organization, some people are trying to will this to happen sooner than it's supposed to happen. And I think we got the confirmation on that today when the doctor said, what are you guys talking about? Have you seen this leg? Take a look.
Yeah.
You know, we said at the beginning of this, it was going to be, you know, 10, 12 weeks, maybe, you know, it's going to be 3 months. And guess what, guys? It's going to be 3 or 4 months. And, you know, we originally said he might have a shot at being back to the playoffs. I think the Lightning really needs to take a step back here and remember about, you know, what's most important here. And I think this is a good wake-up call to everybody. So am I glad he's not going? Yes, because it's the right decision. But I'm unhappy because what it means is that all this talk about him coming along faster than everybody thought really wasn't true. The fact that you feel good is one thing, but when you try to put the kind of stress on that leg that's required to play the game at the
right.
level he plays, that's way too much. And he got that wake-up call today from the doctor. So I guess the ultimate answer is, yeah, I guess I am glad, because now the right thing is going to happen. We're not going to push this kid out on the ice way too soon and way ahead of schedule. And I think that was happening. And I think today was proof that that was happening.
Amen,
Roy, thank you
Roy.
For saying
Amen.
That, Pat. Thank you for saying that. I couldn't, as you know, I can't comment about that, but thank you for saying that. I mean, big trouble down there. Roy, what about, I got a couple questions for, what about, I heard rumors, Michael Vick coming to the Bucks. Is that true rumor they want to trade for Michael Vick?
Well, it's a true rumor, but I don't know if they want to trade for him. Let's face it, the Buccaneers are in a quarterback situation where they need to get a body or two in there,
right.
at least one. They're not sure, you know, having talked to the people inside, there are things about Mike Glennon that they like, but I'm not hearing anybody tell me that they think Mike Glennon is the absolute answer going forward. Now, that may be part of of the games that are played this time of year, when you never want to reveal your hand, where you want people to think that you're going to go for this player or that player in the draft or free agency, when in fact you're going for something completely different. You know, this may all be a setup to make people think that we're not a big Mike Glennon fan here in Tampa, when in fact they are. But the bottom line is they certainly need a quarterback. Now, does Mike Vick fit what they want to do? Again, you got to look at the contract. But for the Bucs, you're in a situation where if they're starting quarterback and even their backup, if they're paying, you know, $3 or $4 million top to their quarterback position, that leaves an awful lot of money for other positions. And
yes,
they need offensive linemen, defensive linemen. They need another receiver. They need they need pieces, guys, and those pieces cost money. So, Mike Vick coming to Tampa, look, it could happen, but I don't know if he's the target. I'd have a hard time believing at this point that that's a target. I may be wrong, but I'll be surprised if that's a target.
Roy, if you were a voter at the game, who would have been your most valuable player?
Bruno Mars. He had the best night of anybody. I don't care who played for
Seattle. You know, I'll tell you, it's interesting you say that because I tape that so that I can play it every night before I go to bed. I have it on a full cycle so that in the background in the living room, it plays all the time. So if I walk in, I have the opportunity to listen. It was so well performed. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well,
here comes the best part. Supposedly, the Red Hot Chili Peppers forgot to plug their guitars in, and somebody noticed it, and they said, "Jesus!" Well, of course they're playing this over the loudspeaker because they can't afford to be out there, and all of a sudden, an amplifier go poof. it was pre-recorded. Hello, but crazy.
I'll tell you what. The one mistake Bruno Mars made was bringing on those clowns of Red Hot Chili Peppers. Bruno Mars is fine. He didn't need any help, especially from those guys, who, by the way, you want to talk about Hall of Fame indignity? There's one. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which don't get me started on that, guys. I'm a big music fan. But there is no question that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is the biggest sham going, because there are bands in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that had maybe one number one hit, if that. And I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers may be one of them. But the fact that those clowns are in the Hall of Fame, so again, don't get me started. But Bruno Mars didn't need them. And you know, I hope on your continuous loop at home there, Don, that you certainly maybe figured out a way to mute the Red Hot Chili Peppers part.
Well, I'm sort of torn between that and the beginning of the award show a couple of weeks ago. I didn't understand the first 45 minutes of what anybody said, but I got it on my reel. That's my secondary reel. So I can listen to it all the time. I don't want to miss a beat.
Well, here's the thing, guys. Our new entertainment and theater critic. Large.
You know, here's the thing, guys. The people that we would relate to, they've used them all up. You know?
Right.
I mean, you can't do McCartney every year. You can't do The Who every year. You can't do The Stones. We've been through it. You know, U2 has done it already. You know, the bands I think that we could all in some way associate with, or listen to on a regular basis, they've used them all up. So,
well, the first time we've heard the national anthem the way it's supposed to be sung in how many years?
That was special.
Wow. That was a great job. That was fantastic.
That was absolutely wonderful.
Right. Excellent. Great job.
Roy, have we seen the last cold weather outdoor Super Bowl?
I'm going to say the answer is no, because the NFL always seems to think it can make things happen when it shouldn't even try. So I think we've seen the last one for a good 8 to 10 years. I'll say that. But I think at some point, and let's face it, here's the reason. They think they pulled it off. And you know what they did? They pulled it off. But, God, you know what? They dodged the bullet. Look at the weather up there now. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the snow started to come down. Had that front moved through any sooner, had moved through 8 hours earlier, they would have had a disaster on their hands.
Roy, look at the week before when it was 2 below zero and snowing. I mean, it wasn't just that one day. It was before and after, as you indicated. I mean, they would have been inundated with snow.
You know one of the problems, guys.
You know one of the real problems is
that I think one of the problems that people are not taking good assessment of is the fact that in major markets like New York, Chicago would be the same. Trying to think of another spot similar, Boston would be like this. Philadelphia, not so much, but certainly New York, Chicago, Boston, where mass transit is the primary mode of transportation for more than 60% of the populace, it's too hard to get people into one place, that many people into one place. They had such an issue, obviously, with the trains getting people on time to that game we talked about earlier. You'd have the same situation in Chicago. You'd have a similar situation certainly in Boston. It's too hard to get people into those facilities because you just can't do it. You've got to have an area where it's really not all that populated.
Right.
Glendale, Arizona works perfectly because of where the stadium is. Miami works great because of where the stadium is. Tampa works because of where the stadium is. New Orleans isn't that well populated. San Diego, right. Those facilities, those locations work because it's not that difficult to get 60 or 70,000 people in the span of 4 hours into one place while the rest of the area, region, is going about their daily life. It is a problem in New York. It will be a problem in Chicago. It will be a problem in Boston. So places like that, Washington is another. That was, I knew there was another one I was thinking of. Washington is in.
Right.
I could see one, you know, having a Super Bowl in Carolina. I could see that. That would work. But I just don't think it's going to work in the other venues, guys. I really don't. And I think hopefully they'll come to that realization.
Hey,
well,
Roy,
I think this was the first Super Bowl since 87 that they didn't have an NFL experience.
Yeah, exactly. And the NFL experience, for what it was a field goal kick and a toboggan slide, which is terrible. And you know what? That's something that the NFL, I think, does really well, is it allows kids an opportunity to be involved in the Super Bowl experience without having a ticket. It always draws big crowds. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of little events. They bring bits of the Hall of Fame in, museum-type things. It's a great experience, the NFL experience, and it's just a shame that because of the way it was set up, that the venue just doesn't afford it to work that they couldn't have the NFL experience in New York, New Jersey.
And plus they're trying to split it between New York and New Jersey, which is always going to be tough. And as I said earlier, my son was over there, and he said that to get on that toboggan thing was a three-hour wait on Saturday and Sunday. You know, all of Times Square was just clogged. I mean, I know they made a lot of money. Everybody made a lot of money, but it was very tough getting around.
Yeah,
it didn't go anywhere near the paraphernalia that they normally sell at a Super Bowl because at the NFL experience, and Roy, we all know, they had those big stores, and they just had none of the big stores that they usually have.
Right,
and
that's
Roy,
right.
Roy, would you agree with this? The game was a success, but the event was a total failure?
I don't even think the game was a success. I think the whole thing was a total failure. I really do. The game was one of the worst games we've ever had. And the NFL has nothing to do with that. That's just, you know, that's the way it played out.
Right.
It's been a while since we've had a horrible blowout like that. But, it went back to the days when that seemed to be the norm. But I think the whole thing was a failure. The NFL will never admit that. But I think the whole thing was a failure. It was a failure from the standpoint of getting fans involved. They didn't do a good job there. It was a failure from the only thing that worked out was the weather. The thing everybody was worried about most worked out. The temperatures were fine. Game day was beautiful. They dodged the bullet, but that worked out. But everything else around it, in my opinion, was a disaster. It was horrible. There were all kinds of mix-ups on media day. 300-some credentialed media could not get into media day because they had a follow-up with the credentials and distribution of them. That didn't get talked about. There's still all kinds of parts. I guess if you read closely the New York Daily News and a couple of other New York papers, you keep reading about some of the real hidden disaster stories that came out of that. But the whole thing was really a disaster. Again, I don't think
Roger,
the NFL
Roger, tell them about the story of getting into the Lincoln Tunnel. That was
I don't know if you heard about this, Roy.
Give that
you
story.
Know, the Broncos Hotel was at the Hyatt in Jersey City, an exchange place, and then we were taking a bus over to the Westin for the Seahawks. So the bus driver got a little confused. He thought we were going back into the city. So he's on the ramp going down into the Holland Tunnel, and one of the guys, one of the media guys on our bus, yells, wait a minute, we got to go over to the other hotel. This guy did a great job. I don't know who he is, but he did a great job. He gets off the bus, goes up, gets the police. They stop all the traffic that's going into the Holland Tunnel so the bus can back out of the ramp and go over to the west. It was a blast.
That's incredible. It shows you the power of the NFL. That's what it
that's
tells
right.
you. It tells you the
well,
power
you know,
of the NFL.
You were talking about New York, and I totally agree with your assessment. It's just not set up for a Super Bowl. And there was an article in the Post of the Daily News. Don may have seen it last week. You know, they're building a new tunnel for the Long Island Railroad. And the ridership last year, calendar year, for the LIRR was over 83 million people, as was Metro North, another 83 million plus. And it was the most they've ever had. Now, factor in New Jersey Transit coming into the city. Is that unbelievable? That's like, well over 200 million passengers. It's calendar year list.
And not only that, Roger, but they need a lot more money. If you want to go through the Lincoln Hall and George Washington Bridge, you got to pay $18 to go through.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And here was the worst part about the game, guys. The only train you could catch was out of Secaucus. The only one.
That's not really true. What happens is they built the transfer station at Secaucus to get the Hoboken trains that come in there and the Penn Station trains. Because
the shoreline, Roger. The shoreline comes in there, too. We just take the shuttle over to the...
They all do. That's why they build it. So what would happen is you take any train from Penn Station out to Secaucus, and then you get on a train to go from Secaucus to the stadium.
It's a shuttle train.
But there's only one
train. It's a shuttle. That's right.
One shuttle is from Secaucus out.
But see, the thing is, you got to remember, when the Jets play there and the Giants play there, they transport 80,000 people every Sunday afternoon. Why they got in so much trouble here, I don't understand. Because every Sunday, 80,000 people show up at Giants Stadium.
That's a very good point.
They didn't have the parking, Don. They eliminated the parking. That was a big thing.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? You're right, Roger. They eliminated the parking, and that's a problem. And guys, I got to run, so I'll leave you with this on this Super Bowl issue. I know the NFL likes to be the thing in the city the week of the Super Bowl. It wants to take over everything. And usually it does. And this Super Bowl was really just kind of a curiosity for New York City.
Hmm.
It was big in the world of sports because it was the biggest thing going on. But in New York City, it was really kind of just a curiosity. It was like, maybe we should go down and take a look at that and see what that's all about. There was so much, it got New York swallowed up this Super Bowl. And I think the NFL wants to be the event in that city, if not in that state, that week. And it really wasn't. I mean, most of New York kind of went on with its business, and the Super Bowl, as you pointed out by the Holland Tunnel story, kind of got in the way of everything. I think the NFL wants to be in markets where everything stops for the NFL, and it doesn't really inconvenience people in the way that it does New York, because let's face it, everything in New York was inconvenienced by the fact that the Super Bowl was there. New York did not benefit from the Super Bowl. It really probably struggled as a result of it being there, and certainly its people did. I think you might even get some pushback from, mayors in cities like Chicago and New York next time people want it, because it's got to be a lot better. It's got to be a lot better worked out than it was this time around.
Roy, last question for me is: what do you think of the new contract today with CBS for 8 of those Thursday night games? How much money can they spend?
Hey, it just goes to show again. It's still the most profitable and marketable and popular sports entity there is, at least in our country. And I'll say this: from the standpoint of the fans, I'm happy. Because as a guy who didn't get the NFL Network until just last year on his cable system, I know there's still a lot of cable systems out there that don't carry the NFL Network, or they make it a premium choice option on the cable packages.
Mm-hmm.
So from the standpoint of the fans, I'm happy. I like it, but it just, again, it just goes to show that there's a race on out there by all the major networks to get this team, this league, on its air, and this time around, I guess CBS won this, or ABC, whoever got it.
No, CBS got it. Not only that, but Jim Nantz and Sims are going to be the two guys broadcasting it. They're their lead team.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. Well, it's going to be interesting. You know, hey, they obviously see a value in it. Here's the thing: what it does for networks is, don't forget, factor out of the equation, the money they put, think about the money they put into buying the entity, the Thursday night game package, for 8 weeks, and it's probably a contract probably extends that to 10 and maybe 14 weeks down the road. But now factor out the money that has to be put into a production of whatever shows fill up that night. If the game starts at 8 o'clock with a pregame show and kicks off at 8:30 with the game and goes through the night, that's a whole night's worth of production savings, in essence, for shows, you know, be it sitcoms, dramas, whatever it is. Those are big cost items, and this is basically going to be all revenue, and it's easy to sell. You know the ratings are going to be dynamic. You may not win the night every week, but you know you're going to probably beat at least one or two of the other networks that you're up against, plus all cable. So you know it's going to win that night. The cost reduction in terms of overall outlay for production is great, and you know you got a winning product, so it makes all kinds of sense from that standpoint.
Roy, always a pleasure, sir, and
right,
I did watch
Roy.
The Puppy Bowl, and we'll talk to you next week, sir. Always a pleasure, Roy.
All right, guys, thanks for having me as usual.
Take care,
Roy.
Have a great week.
Nice job, Roy.
Thank you, Roy.
Tom, I wanted to tell you, you were 100% right yesterday. Scott Graham only did the pregame, postgame, and the Westwood One and halftime. He did not do, you know, actually the play-by-play PA during the game.
Right, that is correct.
Wow. Hey, guys, I'd like to change gears right now. We got Leo's buddy on, our golf pro, Doug. Leo, our buddy's on, Doug.
Hey, the only problem is, guys, I got to go too. So, Doug, you and the pussy have the floor.
Thank you for wearing that hat before me, Leo.
Yeah, Leo, you remind me of Scott Paper. You wipe a new bottom every day.
Doug, what about a golf tip of the week?
I'm out of here. Take care.
Thank you, Leo, for coming on. Oh, my God. All right, what's
hey,
Doug,
Doug,
what about
I'm
a golf
be,
tip?
I'm meeting you for the first time face-to-face, I guess, tomorrow night, right?
That's right. We're going to head down to the airport hopefully tomorrow. Everything's on time. We've had quite a bit of bad weather up here. So if everything holds true, we should be in the great state of Georgia by around noon or so tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, Doug's niece, who's a neighbor up the street, is in the state swimming tournament for high school. She's one of the best in the whole area, and that is at the Georgia Tech Pool Complex, which was the Olympic pool in 1996 for the Atlanta Olympics.
That's right.
Well, the best of luck to her. That's for sure. Wow, we'll get
her.
Doug, we have to get her on next week to tell how she did up there. So, Doug,
I'll tell you what.
Yes.
I was gonna say I haven't seen most of the family down there for it's been some time. I know my wife's going down to visit a few times. Roger's wife Diane had
met her a couple times.
Yep. So She gave me a heads up, so I'll have to feel you out a little bit before I start dropping any kind of, you know, inside intel on you.
You taking the clubs with you down there, because it'll tropical Atlanta?
No, you know what, I tell you what, it will be a heat wave. It's been 20 and 30 degrees up here, so 50 to 55 would be short sleep weather, I think it'd feel like. So, but no,
Are you scheduled for this storm, too? Is this one going to get you?
You know, I've heard conflicting reports on that kind of Saturday night, Sunday morning, Sunday time frame. You know, no one's willing to kind of stick their neck out yet and make a call on what they think it's going to do. It could be the convergence of two storms. It could be just one. It could be a nuisance snow. It could be, you know, a foot and a half snow. Nobody's said anything yet. So, you know, hopefully we come back Monday. So hopefully none of this is really going to impact us, other than right off the plane. You know, we'll have to, you know, probably clean the car off, and then once I get back to the house, I'll have a shovel in hand immediately. So.
Oh.
But this morning and last night, we had one hell of an ice storm here. I mean, we must have had a quarter to a half inch of ice here, and it was just all kinds of problematic for we lost power. There's all kinds of trees and everything down. I mean, it's an absolute mess. I mean, getting gas was a fiasco to just find some place that had power to be able to pump. And, I mean, the grocery stores and everything were just, you know, looted with, you know, people, all kinds of buying water and whatever they could get. So I mean, it was pretty bad there for a while here today. So you know, hopefully we can take care of all that and come on down and maybe have a bagel at Einstein's.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I heard in the Philadelphia area in New Jersey, there's 500,000 residences that are out of power, and I know where I used to live in Hamilton Township. You know, Trenton and Princeton, you know, Don knows it well. He lived over in Ewing and Titusville. And just in Hamilton alone, this morning there were 1,750 residences without power. I mean, for Hamilton, I mean, it's 90,000, 100,000 people in the township. Mm. But that's a big number.
Yeah, I mean, snow is snow. I mean, obviously, you know, plows and trucks and shovels and everything can kind of, you know, eventually take care of that, but ice is so dangerous. I mean, you know, it's just,
oh yeah.
You know,
well, we talked about before you came on and talked about how that window of opportunity for the Super Bowl. I mean, they had so much bad weather right before it. They have so much bad weather, and as Roy said, it started to snow at like 2 in the morning the night of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an amazing thing that they got that game off in 50 degree weather.
I mean, February on the East Coast from, like, Maryland north is just hit or miss. I mean, we haven't really had a solid winter here in Maryland for about 3 years or so. And, you know, they were talking about this next coming storm, you know, usually around President's Day or something like that. Historically, we've gotten walloped with something. So,
Well, 3 years ago in Dallas, that was the worst ice I've ever seen. And remember the damage? The canopy came down at the AT&T Stadium. And then also in 98, I was here in Atlanta for the Super Bowl, and we had an ice storm, and everything was shut down. Barbie Dick Vitale was in an automobile accident and wound up in the hospital. He was in here to do a basketball game. So, you know, it seems like Super Bowl week, unless you get to a really warm climate. In Miami, we had that rain where the tarp came down on top of us. And so, but, you know, unless you're like, I know in the Southwest, and especially like in Phoenix, the weather's been great. So hopefully next year the Super Bowl will be great there.
Hey, watch the snow out there, Roger, in Phoenix.
Wouldn't that be
frost
something?
Out there.
Wouldn't that be something,
snow.
Tommy?
In the snow, here it is up in New York. The temperature is 49 degrees, and there's the third quarter Super Bowl. Remember New Orleans guys back in the 70s? The old Tulane Stadium, they played a kickoff, was 43 degrees there.
That's right.
Well, that's the
right.
record. That's still the record.
Right. But this is the third quarter Super Bowl because there's 49 to kickoff. So, like we said before, the NFL got away with murder up there.
Absolutely.
Well, everybody's had their opinion before we jump to another topic. Your observations on the Super Bowl and what you thought.
Well, as previously noted, when the Baltimore Colts left town, you know, I did have some options here locally with with either Philadelphia, Washington, Pittsburgh, etc. I became a Seahawks fan at that point in time because I loved Steve Largent, and you know, like I said, the logo was intriguing to me when I was a youngster, and just a lot of the players on the Seahawks at that point in time, I just started to follow them a little bit, and then obviously when we got the Ravens, you know, that was kind of tough, but I've always been a Ravens fan from the day they came here, so I was definitely rooting for the Seahawks, and you know, I think it's great for Pete Carroll to get a Super Bowl win. You know, obviously his first go around in the NFL didn't pan out for him as well as he would have hoped. You know, I think his players love playing for him. If you looked at their roster, it was pretty amazing that they have so many either undrafted or fifth, sixth, and seventh round draft picks that really, you know, stepped up and played well. But from the first snap, it was just all Seahawks. Their defense was just so dominating. You know, so, I mean, you know what, I could have convinced myself, I think, that it would have been nice for Peyton Manning to win a second Super Bowl and equal things up in the Manning household and kind of get some of the pundits off his back for, you know, just never winning the big one again. So, but it doesn't hurt my feelings in the least that John Elway has to eat a little bit of humble pie.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Well, let's go over to your sport for a bit because I know that you spent some time this weekend watching Tiger. I know you're a great fan of his, but,
you know, now,
the thing I can't understand, and I know he's everybody in the world thinks he's the greatest you know, golfer that's ever lived, but to get $2 million to play this exhibition game, exhibition match, and then another $2 million in a tournament that he didn't win, I mean, he made $4 million between Sunday and today.
Right.
And didn't win anything.
Right.
Sponsorship, Don. That's probably what it is.
Well, no,
yeah,
they guarantee it when he comes out. You come, we'll give you $2 million to show up.
That's right. I mean, I tell him, I said, where do I have to go? You know, that was, I wish somebody would pay me $2 million to show up. Well,
but it went down the line, though, Doug. It wasn't just Tiger. There were a number of the top guys that got money.
Sure. You know, I think, first of all, I mean, I would back up just, I think, out of pure respect for one Jack Nicklaus and say that I think he is by far, I think, the best player that ever lived.
Thank you.
And I'm sure some people may debate that topic as well. You know, I think Tiger Woods revolutionized and carried the torch forward and helped change the game to where it needed to be during the time that he played it. You know, and I think obviously Tiger in his own right is, you know, I mean, I don't know that he'll ever catch Jack at this point in his career. You know, I root for Tiger, and I like him, and I think that, especially from an American standpoint, when we get involved in Ryder Cups and international-type things, you know, I think he's a wonderful guy to have on your team. He's a great match player. You know, he's won, you know, what is it, 82 tournaments? Is that right?
It's close, if it's not right.
Yes.
It's, I mean, you know, a bunch of tournaments. I mean, you know, so he's dominated the sport for some time. Amazingly enough, he's gone through not one, not two, but three different swing changes to try to maximize different things on his body. I mean, say what you want to. I mean, I'm 39, so he's probably 38-ish. You know, he's had a lot of wear and tear on his body and his knees and that sort of thing, so he's had to develop and change his swing, and that's a pretty big step at that level to go through that. And obviously you've seen some of the mostly the downfalls, you know, from him switching to Sean Foley and his inability to win during the time that he made that change. But, you know, regardless of whether he ever wins another major or not, I mean, what did he win, four times last year on tour, six times, you know what I mean? So, I mean, he's still, you know, at the forefront of the game, and he's still winning. And that's what people pay for when, you know, when you say that he got $2 million just to show up. I mean, he's Tiger Woods, and that's what they pay for. You know, obviously, I think that they said that statistically this was the first year in his career that he played his first two golf tournaments and never finished in above 20th or something. So, you know, obviously he hasn't started his season the way he wants it to be, you know, and, you know, his focus is probably on the Masters, you know, which is right around the corner. Because he knows his window of time is starting to close to get the opportunity to catch up to some of these majors, and that's, frankly, I think that's why he's still playing the game. That's what drives him. He wants number 19. And,
right.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Great point.
At what point do you say,
you know, do the great ones walk away? I mean, look at Barry Sanders. I mean, geez, a whiz. They showed him the other day. I think he could have played last year. You know what I mean? He was looking good. Yeah, but at what point do these people walk away from the game? I mean, when's enough enough? You know, how much money do you need, or how many wins do you need, or Super Bowls? I mean, look at Peyton Manning. I mean, he's 37 years old. If he won that Super Bowl, would he have retired?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Yeah, but, you know, what drives him?
That's a great point. The same thing up in your neck of the woods. Cal Ripken Jr. came out there, retired at the right time up there.
That's
you
right.
talk about the, you know, rest of the players, Alexander Ovechkin. The same thing with the Capitals. This is the window closing on the Washington Capitals for winning the Stanley Cup this year. Look at the if you look at the Lightning right now, the Lightning the way they're playing right now, the old Southeast Division, they'd be probably 8 points ahead of Washington right now. Of course, I don't know if you heard Stamkos not on the Canadian Olympic team. We touched about that, and I can't comment about that. It's going to tell you what happened. I can't comment about that, or else my boss is hearing this, and I get would be in trouble. So no comment. Can't comment.
Well, yeah, I was going to say. I mean, if you look at look at the NBA and look how pathetic the East is. I mean, the Washington Wizards are like in fifth place, and they're what are they? One game above 500.
Oh, terrible, terrible. Let me throw another question out there for everybody. Were you online with the MVP of the Super Bowl? Everybody think that was the Super Bowl MVP?
I think so, Don, because he scored a couple touchdowns. He was one of the key things was what Seattle won. It's just like when the Bucks won. Dexter Jackson was the MVP, scored the turnaround touchdown, intercepted a pass up there. There could have been a John Lynch or Derek Brooks, but I got to give that guy credit for Seattle winning the MVP because he was one of the key to turn the game around and Peyton didn't have a chance.
Roger?
Well, you know, I don't know who else that you could have picked. I mean, it could be Russell Wilson, but, you know, he didn't set the world on fire with that game. It was a lot of turnovers. Yeah, I guess that's as good a pick as anybody.
Doug?
I think for my money, I'm going with Percy Harvin. I think that his presence in that game, I think, kind of changed how the Broncos were looking at how they were going to play defense. And he had a couple of those little, you know, behind the line of scrimmage handoffs on a pseudo end around that kind of changed some of their field position. And obviously, that I think that the return he made in the second half to start that was just the punch in the face they needed to close that game out. So, I'd probably go with Percy Harvin.
I agree with that. I thought that, and most of the players on the NFL postgame show, talked about that being the crushing blow. After that, it was quite obvious that they lost their intensity. They came out with the second half thinking, if we get on the board, maybe we can make a game of it. And before they ever got one playoff, they're down another 7 points. So
yeah,
that was a very, very big play. I agree with you.
We do have to send out congratulations from another sport to Charlie Manuel for going into the Phillies Wall of Fame. Well deserved, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And what a representative of the Phillies all those years.
No question about it. And to get that kind of recognition, maybe it's going to soften the blow a little bit as to what happened at the end of last year. And as you pointed out, Roger, it was a radio show down in the South that he announced he was coming back before Tate Montgomery even had a chance to announce it. So now to get into on the Wall of Fame, I agree with justly deserved and really something fun.
I second that motion, guys. I know Charlie's a person. Lightning had a golf tournament over there, Polk County. I got to play with Charlie a couple of times and up there, and he said to me, one day in the Rays press box, Don, Roger, and Doug and everybody, and he said, I want to be a manager someday. This is the year he just got fired from the Indians after getting the Indians in the playoffs on 1 year. Then they had a bad year, and then unfortunately John Hart fired him. But then I said, Charlie, you're going to get your day. You're going to win the World Series. You got over 30 years of baseball experience. And by George, what did he do 2008? Reunited with Jim Thome, who was one of his top pupils. And it's for Charlie Manuel, it's a great for him, and it's I hope he comes down to Clearwater this year and get to talk to him some more.
I'm sure he will.
Well, he'll be there. He'll be there.
No question about
I know Frank gets the Philadelphia Daily News, and I want to get back to Doug, but real quick, WIP and the Wing Bowl are taking a lot of heat from some of the writers. And I thought what was amazing is the woman that won, what was it, 363 wings, Frank?
Yes.
Yeah, she weighs like
not even 100 pounds.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. But Ronnie Polanski, I think is how you pronounce it. I think she's a terrific columnist. Boy, two days in a row, she was defending herself today, but yesterday she really buried Wing Bowl.
Yeah, she did a great job on it. I agree with you, Rudge. It just looked like, even the pictures that you see, it looks like how low can you go?
Yeah, right.
Page 9 of the
Philadelphia Journal. Frank, Mike Missanelli suspended again from 97.5.
Oh,
you know,
no.
He gets in more trouble. It's unbelievable. You know, Don, I don't know how the guy keeps on getting a job when he gets suspended.
What are they jacking for this time?
Emails with a listener.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'll tell you, I put the Wing Bowl in the same category I put the halftime show in the Super Bowl.
Get that on another disc?
That's about the Puppy Bowl.
You have to go online and see Wing Bowl because you have to really understand it. I don't know if you've heard about it or not.
Well, the only thing about my circular disc is that all I get out of the Wing Bowl is...
Yeah.
Good thing Lyle's not here. He would have gone in
here. They marketed that, Don? Post Wing Bowl parties. Paraphernalia. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Well, remember when they first started, then they got it into the Spectrum, and it was almost like an event. I mean,
yeah.
It's like the hot dog thing on, you know, Coney Island. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well,
more morons there than you can find anywhere in America.
I know Frank will attest to this. Ronnie really had a good point because the strip club operators are all up in arms, or a couple of them are, because they get hit by L&I all the time for their licenses. They want to know if the Wells Fargo Center or WIP has a license for strippers.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they got in trouble with that once before, you know, on the morning show with the bringing the strippers in there and all. They've made a number of times now where they've gotten involved in that.
I wonder if Brookie's turning over in his grave, guys. He's the one who brought Angelo and Al in.
Jeez, like it's... Oh, someone's probably turning over his grave
when
you think about
that. I do that because I know Frank and I both track the Daily News every day. So.
Hey, Roger, one more question about the Daily News. What's Phantom Rider thinking about that? And when they had that Super Bowl in Philadelphia, you can't beat the system. You can't beat the SEPTA buses.
Well, you know what, Tommy, that's a good point because the Eagles are going to make a play for the Super Bowl. You know, I think that, what is it, the next four are already scheduled.
Right, next four,
but
yes.
My opinion is what the guy that's going to run it, the organization, is Ed Randell.
Mm-hmm.
And with all of his contacts and with Comcast, and I was talking to Derek Gunn quite a number of times last week at the press conferences. And, you know, Comcast is going to build another new tower in Philadelphia.
Mm.
And WCAU-TV is going to move there from City Line and Monument, that historical building. And they're going to be at the new Comcast Center. And then also Derek told me, I think, Don, you may know about it, and Frank may have said it in the paper, the top floors at the new tower is going to be the Four Seasons Hotel. So it's going to be bigger than the tower they have now. And I think that with Comcast and with Ed Randell and Dave Cohen, you know, his former chief of staff, who's the executive VP of Comcast, I could see that being pulled off.
and especially if it's a year that NBC has the contract because of Comcast owning NBC.
Well, I agree with you 100% on that, Roger. The only disagreement I would have is that, you know, it's so tough to get all those owners to vote for it. I mean, you got to have an overpowering vote to get the Super Bowl booth to it. And posted a very big piece on it today because Schumer wants to have a guarantee from the league that they'll bring it back to New York in 10 years. He wants to be in a 10-year cycle in New York. And the third city was Philadelphia. And I can tell you right now, Temple football, Lori's already jacking up the price in 15 to $500,000 a game if they want to play at the link. $500,000 a game.
Yeah, that's why Temple's talking about building their own stadium. Like,
well,
yeah,
they can't afford that.
Well, I agree, but what's the next step going to be? Drop football? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know, but I mean, Lori's trying to raise as much money as he can to make more adjustments in the link, and also to induce the National Football League, because as the Post pointed out today, you know, it's pretty much not a guarantee, but you got at least a leg in the door if you have a new stadium.
Well, he's spending $150 million to upgrade the link, too, and when you look at it now, did you know that that is totally green? All the power comes from the sun. They have those sun
shields
all over the place.
Right.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Didn't Leonard Toews want to have the Super Bowl in Philadelphia back in the 70s?
Well, they never did.
No.
That was only the one day that he was sober.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the only time, I mean, they talked all the early part of the Super Bowls were always going to be in warm weather. It's only been in the last, well, they went to Detroit because of the sponsorship of the automobile business, and they wanted to give them, you know, hand out a little granite of sand to them. And then they went to Ford Field. Yeah, and then they did it in New York because they spent $1.2 billion, you know, building that field. So MetLife jumped in there too. And so now they're saying that, you know, some of the new stadiums that go up, depending on how much money is spent and so forth, they would have an inside track maybe to get the Super Bowl. And also, as you know, Texas wants it back again. Dallas wants it back, and so does Houston.
Wow, Don, it was 75 degrees down here in Tampa on Sunday, and in New York got so lucky for that weather. You know, my theory is about the Super Bowl, that's the NFL's big party of having the companies come down to a warmer climate like the college bowls do, and the economic impact like, say, Tampa or Phoenix, to bring all the corporate guys down. I mean, the NFL experience a lot better in the warmer cities and get around a lot better.
But Tommy, it's all dollars and cents. Everything is dollars and cents. You know.
It's all dollars. Doug, are they talking about making a bid in Baltimore?
You know, I was wondering, the big thing here is obviously the lacrosse situation, which was huge at M&T Bank Stadium. So, I think it's a wonderful venue. Parking's plenty pretty much between Camden and M&T. So, if it sounds like it could be a possibility.
The light rail that comes right there.
Yep.
And you're right off of 95, you know, so it's easy access to highways.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep. So.
Yeah, Don and I were there at Camden Yard with our hats on, weren't we, Don?
That's exactly right. They were right in the midst of the building when we were inside there.
Yeah. Beautiful place for sure.
Yep, so it is. It was really a forerunner of the new, sure. And I still think, to be honest with you, it's one of the best, even though it's, going to be 20 years old now, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's one of the best.
22 years old, I think, now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just for the record, Tiger Woods has 79 career victories. I looked it up.
Oh, 79.
Wow.
I thought it was 82. I'm sorry. I was wrong about that. Jeez almighty. But
that's the first mistake you've made, Tommy.
I know. You should cut down the officials, Don. Tomorrow night the hockey game is going to be F troop. Sergeant O'Rourke's going to.
Those officials are going to throw a red flag on you and say, "I was listening to your program. I don't even know what Tiger Woods says."
Hey, we didn't hear anything about Tort this week with his 15-game suspension.
He apologized. Did you see that article in the paper today?
Oh, God.
He apologized to everybody that was breathing.
Yeah. That's a torch being on the nice side. Once you hear a bad call, he'll start cussing. He'll start yelling at the referees. Oh, I was just a fly on the wall when Torch is back playing against the Rangers. Larry Brooks probably got to be talking to Torch. He says, "Brooks, I'm not going to answer anything from you. Next." I get to know Torts on the inside, but Channel 13 affiliate down, I'm not going to mention any names. They're on there one day on a Tuesday, right? It's during the football season. So Torts says, hey, what's the matter? John Gruden not speaking today? he walked out of the building up there and that, but...
Well, they did okay while he was gone. Well, they went 4-2 while he was gone.
Right. Yeah, but now he said they got to change personnel. Like, oh, boy. Torch won't be there much longer. I got a good feeling with that press up there. I just want to see him come here on March 17th, so I get to see him one more time again as a head coach up there. But that's always funny when he comes through the building out there. Make a long story short, guys, he got me one time at Brandon. This is the old days, Roger, Don, and Doug and Frank about the tape machines up there, right? So we had to get that for the website for the Lightning, so I had to put the tape up there, right? Torch says, "You got a minute?" "No, Tommy, get the blankety blank F out of here. Now, we'll ever show up here again." And Chief and Rick Peckham, they were on the joke up there. I said, "Wow, Torch meant what he said, right?" I was shaking so much. So, and Chief and Rick said, "Tommy, get back here. John was just kidding." I said, "Oh, thanks, John. My heart shrank down, and then it gave me a big hug." And I said, "Tommy, we're trying to loosen this thing up, and you're always good to loosen everybody up." I'm like, "Oh, dear. My heart just shrank so down in the floor, guys. I was shaking so much up there and that." But we know that the Torts up there and that. So it's just going to be interesting. We got the Toronto Maple Leafs in town tomorrow night. Detroit's in town on Saturday. I'm kind of glad. I'll say one thing about Steven Stamkos. Thank God our doctor, Dara Gutenberg, stepped up to the plate and says he's not playing. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Right. Hey, I'll tell you, the Maple Leafs are playing pretty well, Tommy. I mean,
yes.
That'll be fun. It's fun tomorrow night.
Oh yeah, it'll be funny when the it's so funny, Don, when and everybody when they do the morning skate. All you do is follow the Toronto media around. that's all you do. You're in there, out of there in 20 minutes. So it's gonna be fun up there. Don, we have to get you to a hockey game and get Frank come up to the hockey game and that. So.
We'll be there when it's this two week hiatus. Now we have to wait until we get to.
I know
when they come back.
I know, against Buffalo, Thursday, March 8th against Buffalo. So it's, I want to get your opinion about this. Do you think the NHL should stop their season and send those guys to the Olympics?
No. No.
Good, okay. Good.
Well, I don't think you have any really control over the players that are not from the United States. I think the American players probably wouldn't bolt at not going. But I think you'd have a lot of trouble with the foreign players. I think they all want to represent their country, and I think you'd have a very, very tough time having them not participate in the Olympic Games. Doug, what do you think?
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I think it's a better situation, obviously from an NBA standpoint or whatever, from how the seasons miss each other. But you know what I mean? From a hockey standpoint, I think it means more to the foreign players to represent their countries. So I would agree with you.
I agree, yeah.
Okay.
Doug's father-in-law and I, are going to be coming down together for spring training, so we're looking forward. Roger, cannot wait till we meet you guys in person.
Oh, I can't wait to meet him. It'll be awesome up there. As Frank says, tick, tick, tick. We're up against the clock again. So,
well, I just hope that Roger has a GPS on his car because we don't want him to wind up in Chicago.
Yeah.
Don, you won't have to worry about it. There's a tilts and kilts right off the field there, so I know where they'll be watching the game.
Fellas, once again, it was terrific. A lot of fun. Yes, thanks to Roy. Great thanks time. To Leo. Everybody that joined us tonight, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, God bless you, Don.
Thanks a lot. God bless. Thanks, Frank. And thanks for a great job.
Get them another million or $2 million for an exhibition match. Will you please? Sure. I don't want them to go broke.
I'll take 10% of that.
See you later.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
See you guys. Thank you.
Take care, Doug. Well, Frank, another show in the books up here. I'd like to thank Warren Samuels, head coach for the Tampa Bay Storm. Of course, Roy Cummings, a good friend of mine and a good friend of the program. Of course, our football guru, Leo Haggerty, our golf pro, Doug, our Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Hendler. Of course, our Philadelphia legend, Mr. Don Henderson. Of course, Frank, you every week, just a highlight of my week every week, talking to sports to all around. Roundtable discussions, we call it. To thank Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. When you purchase a water heater, log on to BradfordWhite.com. Reminder, Lightning fans, home Thursday night versus Toronto, home Saturday night versus Detroit, 7 o'clock faceoff. If you're going to go to the games, get your tickets now, 813-301-6600, skate to TampaBayLightning.com. As founders, I think the Detroit game sold out, but act now, Frank. God bless. Have a great week. Tell Miss Sharon my very, very best and the boys. And I'll tell Barbie that your Skyhawks did good. Good night, Frank.
Good night. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. Grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, just introduce your kids to them. They'll love it. Just say it. A kind word from anybody for anybody in uniform is really makes their day. These programs are also dedicated to the members that lost their lives. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerbeth, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longview Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ahezah yelama, son ashen evorat fet, hakuig again ma yelama. Proud and kind.
Good night, Bob. We miss you. We love you.